don't mind other guys dancing with my girl.
Welcome back to KSCJ Radio, 1360 AM, 94.9 FM in Sioux City, Iowa. I'm Brian Vikalskis, and this is Having Read That, conversations with authors about their books.
My guest is Carlos Hernandez, and he is out with his new book, Sal and Gabby Fix the Universe. Carlos, this is the sequel to your critically acclaimed series debut, Sal and Gabby Break the Universe. Middle grade sci-fi with Cuban influence, but the characters didn't start in this series. Where did Sal and Gabby originate?
So I wrote a collection of short stories called The Assimilated Cuban's Guide to Quantum Santeria, and both of those characters appear as adults in those books. And so when I was approached by Disney to possibly write a middle grade book, I thought, two favorite characters, what if I stuck them in the same middle school? And the rest is history.
You know, it's kind of funny because usually the characters start as children and become adults in later books. You did it backwards here. What's that like as far as character development, where you have all the adult traits of a character and you have to go back and find out those origins?
Yeah, so very much, I think we're living in an age of prequels where people have discovered the joy of the prequel and going back, you know, and I think maybe even, Darth Vader gave us that love of the aesthetic of, like, where could this person have possibly come from? So I actually think, it's not something that we've seen a lot of in previous kinds of writing, and so I think we're keyed and ready for explorations that go back and forward in time with our characters that we love. So to me, it was a way, first of all, to write quickly. Being able to say, okay, I know these characters, I love these characters. Let me see what I can do to dig out their origins. And knowing, for instance, Sal as an adult, somebody who becomes a physicist on his own, but starts out more like as a magician and an art student, gave me a kind of trajectory to think about, here's somebody who hasn't, figured everything out yet, and this is how he got there. And that's the thing, because in the story that I write for The Assimilated Cuban's Guide, Sal is basically having a memory as an adult of his childhood. That's basically the story. It's like one tremendous flashback. So I guess that, in a way, made it easier to write as well. And with Gabby, it was a little bit different because Gabby Real has always been sort of like the character I've written to teach me things, an aspirational character, a character like, this is the way I wish I would have acted in this certain kind of situation, or sort of like the kind of courage and bravura I wish I had shown or would show in this kind of situation. So Gabby very much is sort of like that character that I would like to become. And so putting that together with Sal seemed like a very natural fit.
Do you seem boxed in at all creatively? Because you know how these characters turn out as far as becoming adults, so you're limited as to the experiences they can have as a child. I mean, you can't make it too wild. Nobody can lose an arm or something in an accident or anything like that. So how does that box you in creatively to know that you have a certain, end product you're working with?
But I am writing in a multiverse where these characters that I wrote about in one might just be different versions of the Sal and Gabby. And so maybe in mine, everybody loses arms, or there are no such things as arms in this universe. So, the multiverse gives me an end run around that very real problem. But less facetiously and more realistically, art is born from constraints. And, whether it's the size of your canvas or the number of syllables you get to put in a sonnet, the constraints create art. They create the limitations from which beauty flourishes. So, to me it's like the difficulty is the blank white page. The difficulty is horrible, horrible freedom, as the ants say as they're released into the space station on The Simpsons. That's the thing that makes art hardest, but once we start constraining ourselves, that's when we really start to build and to flourish, I think.
So how did Rick Riordan and Disney come into the picture for you?
So Rick had read The Assimilated Cuban's Guide to Quantum Santeria. Again, that was a short story collection for grown-ups, and he just liked it. And so he very, it came from a small press, and it was you know, like a relatively small book. It sold a couple of thousand copies, did pretty okay. It got some good reviews, but you know, it was a smaller book. There was no reason in the universe or the multiverse for Rick Riordan to have read that book, and yet he did, and then he liked it. So what I've been telling people is, like, I don't get to win Lotto. This is my Lotto. This is my one in a billion chance to have, you know, this book being read by someone who then hands it to his editor, Stephanie Lurie at Disney, who is maybe the best editor who's ever existed. Thank you, Steph, for everything. And she liked it, and then she took me out for a Cobb salad in New York City. Very fine Cobb salad. And then she's like, hey, have you ever thought about writing middle grade? And, you know, it's just between bites, I'm like, well, I am now.
Sal is a very sensitive kid, a very sensitive boy. He reminds me a lot of my two middle school-aged nephews, in fact. Mm. Not typical testosterone-filled character in fiction. So how did those characters, those characteristics develop organically as you were creating him?
Yeah, and I mean, I think I was a sensitive kid too, but also an ebullient kid. And, you know, a kid who liked running around, but also, you know, a kid who loved to read. And so to me it was like, the idea of writing a boy character who is complicated and, you know, who is sensitive and who makes a bunch of mistakes and who has his feral moments, you know, Sal is not innocent. he's not simply, you know, this cipher, you know, of goodness that we can just plunge ourselves into. To me, it's like that's the reason to write these kinds of books, so that we can help kids see themselves. And the fact that you could see, you know, your own middle school kids in them is exactly the goal of the book, to help to show, you know, that, well, let me just say this too. I've been visiting a lot of schools to talk about the Sal and Gabby books and about writing in general, and, you know, I've been seeing a sea change in the generations of how boys are different now than they were when I was growing up, and all to the better, you know, that they're much more affectionate and just seemingly much better with their feelings, and that, you know, I feel like the kids are all right, you know, like, boys are doing better, you know, in terms of being able to express emotion than they used to be, and so, in a way, I'm just trying to keep up with their talents. I'm trying to keep up with portraying what I've been seeing.
Another thing about Sal, he has type 1 diabetes, and I can't remember ever reading a character in fiction who has diabetes, whether it's adult fiction, whatever type of fiction. So this detail in Sal's life, how did that come about? 'Cause I think that's such an interesting character trait.
Yeah, and so it was a convergence of several things. First of all, I happened to be reading, in preparation for writing Sal and Gabby, that the Latinx population, it has the fastest growing numbers of type 1 and type 2 diabetics in the country right now. No one's exactly sure why, but that startled me. It startled me awake, thinking, whoa, why? What is happening? And like I said, myriad factors might be at play, and you know, nobody's exactly sure. But, you know, it was a wake-up call to me. And it's like, okay, well, here's some good I can do in the world. I can make Sal a type 1 diabetic and wake people up to that. But, you know, in graduate school, I also took a class with Leonard Davis, who is one of the country's great experts on disability studies. And in disability studies, you know, you learn a great deal about how important it is to portray people with disabilities in realistic human ways, as opposed to the very, you know, black and white ways that they often get portrayed. It's like, you are only your disability, you can only think in terms of your disability, these sort of like flat, you know, unrounded characters. So to me, I wanted to make a character who had diabetes, who also was an out-and-out hero, you know, just a kid who was a hero and who deals with his disease in a way that is in line with the way that, you know, with the research I was doing and the people I was able to talk to fits with what happens with diabetes. And, of course, there's a panoply of reactions and a panoply of ways of dealing with diabetes, not all of them healthy. And so Sal, for instance, has, you know, a couple of episodes, certainly one in the first book, Break the Universe, and a little less so in Fix the Universe, but he's still dealing with things, and he's resistant to, you know, some of the latest technology that we use, like the closed loop systems in diabetes, because he feels like it makes him think about it too much and become only his diabetes, and so he's resistant to it. And that came straight from, you know, talking to kids and how, in you know, some kids just take to the latest technology and love it. Others are so resistant to it that they're still doing injections like they were in the 80s and things like that. So, you know, it's the sort of thing where I wanted to help people see people with diabetes, first and most importantly, as people. Secondly, as people who are also heroes. And thirdly, people who, you know, maybe make a few mistakes here and there when it comes to managing their disease, because guess what? We're human and we're going to make mistakes.
Gabby has this collection of dads in the book, sort of an It Takes a Village type of thing. What was their, what are all her dad's roles in her life?
Yeah, so, I mean, you kind of, you have my answer for me. It's the It Takes a Village kind of idea. And so to me, one of the things that I wanted to do in this book is for all the different kinds of families that are out there, I wanted to say, I see you, and I want you to feel good about your family, whatever it looks like. In my own life, I've had a very supportive family. You know, I had a mom and a dad who just absolutely supported me, which, you know, I was a kid who was going to study, you know, English, like reading poetry and writing poetry in college. And, you know, I think the cliche that we hear about is from immigrant families, oh, you have to go study and be a doctor, an accountant, or a lawyer or something. But my parents weren't like that. They wanted me to study. They gave me the freedom, and they let me, you know, study this artistic endeavor. And then I went on to graduate school and continued to study it. And so, you know, to me it was like I wanted to make sure that that family was honored, and I think it is in the way that we see the father and the mother, Sal's father and stepmother portrayed. But then I have so many people that I consider family who are not blood. I have so many people in my life that I am just so honored to have met and grateful to know who have changed my life for the better. And, you know, that they're family too. And so found family plus blood family equals family is one of the theses of Sal and Gabby.
You know, you're living and working in New York City, or, you know, the New York City area, and you're right in the middle of this pandemic. How's the last 2 months been for you?
So, I actually can't speak to that very well, because even though I live fairly close to the epicenter of the pandemic normally, I've been sojourning in Arizona with my mother-in-law, my wife, just because I came here to do a book fair, and then the book fair was canceled, and then we didn't have to leave because there was a place to stay here. So what I would say is that being away from New York has been painful in some ways because, you know, I love my city and, you know, in a way I want to be there to be of help. But on the other hand, I don't want to be a strain on those resources. You know, I had a way to, you know, be away from New York and not put any extra strain on the very limited resources that existed there, and you know, we're I hope, you know, over a certain kind of curve for a very short time until other things happen. And, you know, what I do is I keep up with the news and I talk to my friends, and I'm just sending every good vibe back to New York City, you know, to all of my friends who are there. And, you know, I have friends who are in the healthcare area who are, you know, exposing themselves daily to danger in order to help other people, and I'm just so grateful for them. And here I am in sunny Arizona, you know, in a very, you know, safe environment where, you know, we're pretty set. So, you know, I guess there's part of like kind of a survivor's guilt going on where I'm like, oh my poor New Yorkers, and here I am. Very, you know, it's much easier for me to get toilet paper and be safe, you know, and at the same time, I'm glad not to be a burden on a place right now that I love.
All right, the book is Sal and Gabby Fix the Universe by Carlos Hernandez. The book's available now wherever fine books are sold. The walk-in bookstores may be closed, so you can get this thing online too, but support local bookstores as well. And Carlos Hernandez, just absolutely fantastic series here. I know my nephews read it they were looking forward to the second book coming out. And so I thank you for joining me today to talk about it.
Oh, thank you so much.
This has been Having Read That on KSCJ Radio in Sioux City, Iowa. I'm Brian Vakalskis. Check out all of our episodes on our website, kscj.com. Also, be sure to like Having Read That on Facebook and subscribe to our iTunes podcast. Thanks to segment producer John Weisler. We will be back next time.
And when the kids are all right, the kids are all right.